Today's date is January 30th, 1991. I'm in the office of Dr. Vinton Bell, who's the principal of Harding High School in Charlotte, North Carolina. Dr. Bell, I'd like for you to introduce yourself and say that you know this is being recorded, this interview is being recorded.
Okay. My name is Vint Bell. I'm principal here at Harding High School. I am aware that the information that I'm giving there is being recorded.
I'm so pleased that you answered my questionnaire and sent it back to me. I'm doing research on the role perceptions of black high school principals. I wrote to the State Department to find out how many black administrators we had of high schools last year. They sent me a list of 41, and of those 41, some of them are principals of what we call the alternative schools and not traditional high schools. Back in 1964, there were over 200 black high school principals. So I'm interviewing principals from 1964 and 1989, and then I'm going to do a comparison. And I'm using the oral history method. So I'm interviewing you, then it'll be transcribed, then I will make some analysis from my findings from these interviews.
Will we get some results of the stuff you're doing?
Yes, you will. Okay. You'll get a copy of it. You'll get one of the transcriptions back so that you can see if you need to make any revisions or anything before I use it. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me how you became a high school principal.
How did I become a high school principal? Okay. Everything will be pretty well except for the dates. I don't. I started out teaching in 1966 in a junior high school, all black junior high school, York Road. Later name was changed to Kennedy, okay, junior high school here in Charlotte. Having been a product of the Charlotte Mecklenburg school system myself as a student, teaching in junior high school and coaching, we had a desegregation plan. I was transferred to South Mecklenburg High School. Okay. This is when they were closing down the black schools and getting the black teachers to be absorbed into the other system. Went to the high school at South Mecklenburg, taught math there for a while. While there, I became the principal there, had me doing other duties in addition to teaching, like covering the halls and running the chaperone the cafeteria. And he apparently saw some things in me and encouraged me to help him out more in the office area. And while doing that, I began to like that type of stuff. So I thought about that time pursuing an administrative certification. I'd already received my master's from Notre Dame at the time. But I did not have an administrative certification. So then I began to work on my administrative certification at UNCC. One of my person that I worked with at South Mecklenburg, who was Jim Emerson, who's now the area superintendent for the South Olympic area, was assistant principal at South Mecklenburg at the time I was there and when I was a teacher. And he and I got to be quite good friends. So when he got his first appointment as the administrator of the Metro Center Evening School, he asked that I could I work with him as a second job in the evenings. And there I assisted him very much with that, and I began to even like, because he was off campus a lot, and I got a chance to run the school. Mm-hmm. And I liked it even more. So he and I became closer. And when he received his first high school principalship, or first real principalship, he worked it out so that I would go with him to Olympic High School as his assistant, administrative assistant. Mm-hmm. And then no teaching assignment, just his number one assistant, okay? Mm-hmm. And I worked there with several assistant principals and got to enjoy the job quite a lot. And then the bug bit me again, so I finished my certification at UNCC. And from there, I stayed for numerous years as an assistant to the principal. And then I went over as assistant principal at West Mecklenburg High School for about 6 months. And then from there, I received my first principalship, which is in a junior high school. Which I remained there for 5, 6, 7 years, I guess. And then from there, I was transferred to Harding as principal. And I've been here, this is my fourth year here at Harding High School.
Mm-hmm. All right. Tell me something about Harding High School.
Harding High School, well, I guess it started in 1935, I guess, back in, way back in the old days where I was born. Harding is traditionally, was originally located, to my best of my knowledge, near Irving Avenue. You probably heard about Dorothy Counts. This was a school that she tried to enter, okay, but it was located on the other side of town. At that time, you know, naturally it was all white. Harding, the new plant was on this area, came here about 57, 55, and they moved to this side of town. It originally was a predominantly white school. In fact, I look at the yearbooks and see how they changed over the years. And we had a copy of all the yearbooks in the media center, and I just discovered those things down there. It's changed gradually. Harding was located in a neighborhood school setting, and the neighborhood around here immediately, a while back, was predominantly white. And the school was predominantly white. It reflected the student body. And over the years, the school has changed from white to black. We're about 64% black in the school. Harding has one of the unique characteristics, as does the West Mecklenburg. There are 11 high schools, and there are only two high schools in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system that have grades 9 through 12, and Harding being one of the schools. We have a population of approximately 1,000 kids, 900 to 1,000 kids, which makes us not the smallest high school, Olympic being the smallest, but we're the smallest. If you take out the ninth graders, we'll be the smallest high school. But the ninth graders in, we're not the smallest high school. We serve, we have approximately about 30 to 40 ADM positions, okay? And then a whole lot, 17, 19 vocational positions, and we have a unique, I should say, one of the unique things about it is that we have the BEH classes here, three units of BEH, two of self-contained cross-categorical classes here. We have 50, 60 some students who are in the resource program. So we have a wide, wide range of students. Our socioeconomic level is not the highest, it's quite low, okay? Not only for the black, but also for the white students. We are very competitive based on what we're dealing with, based upon our socioeconomic ladder. One of the other unique things about Harding is that Harding also has an evening school that operates here in the evenings. Naturally in the evenings. When we get ready to leave, then we don't close, the school's not closed. Another set of students come in, and this is a set of students who come from all the surrounding high schools who may have been high-risk students or dropped out before, who go to school here in the evenings from 3-something to about 8, 9 o'clock at night. And those are a couple of the characteristics. But basically, we've always been known to be highly competitive. We have Moorhead Scholars. We won the Phil Houston Award for the last umpteen times. Harding has had either the male or female recipient of that. We've been known to be highly competitive athletically. Scholastically, we're definitely improving. We had a Moorhead Scholar. We had the Phil Houston, as I said before, Phil Houston Award winner for the past 4 or 5 years consecutively. We have a very, very dedicated faculty.
What size is your faculty?
Well, as I said before, we fill 91 boxes. 91. Okay, I put it like 91 boxes. You have about 35 to 40 ADM positions. Mm-hmm. You have the 17 vocational positions, and you have the special ed, and you have all these other different band and all this type of things. But we usually fill about 91 boxes. We have secretaries, 5 secretaries. I have 3 assistant principals. Have 3 guidance counselors, and that's and 2 media specialists with an aide. We have a pretty vast. We're a very comprehensive high school.
What's your racial makeup of your faculty?
I never thought about that. Okay, Charlotte-Mecklenburg requires, not required, but they have a goal to keep you within the 30%. Range as far as the faculty, something that is very similar to the student body. So we are probably on the upper part of 30 something percent minority faculty on our staff.
But your minority enrollment is about 64%.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to ask you something about the responsibilities you have and how you deal with them. Tell me about supervision of personnel and teacher selection.
Okay. We have an organizational chart. I have three assistant principals. Okay. And the hierarchy of the organization chart is as follows. The principal is that I supervise the three assistant principals. Okay. Each one of my assistant principals had their responsibility for a certain faction of the campus. For example, one of the assistant principals in charge of the custodians, and that means he's in charge of anything dealing with maintenance. Okay. And he will have so many teachers he's responsible for observing during the year. He maybe have three departments he's working with, like the vocational department and then maybe another department. He's responsible for doing that. And anything related to maintenance, that's his wing. Have another assistant principal who's in charge of the secretaries. Okay. And this is, we're trying to cut down the my scope of trying to manage. One assistant principal is in charge of secretaries, and all the duties and things that relate to secretaries would fall in her realm. And she also has a certain number of teachers in certain departments, whatever her major is. Basically, her major is English. Therefore, she has English teachers and some other teachers that she's responsible for doing, basically, for their evaluations and PDPs and things of that nature. Then you have another assistant principal who's a science major, okay? And she's in charge of the guidance counselors. Now, the head guidance counselor works direct with me, too. But as far as the person who's in charge of that department is the assistant principal who has the guidance counselors, and then she has the duties that are associated with that fall in her realm. My job is mainly to manage the three of them and see that they take care of things. And I also have the financial secretary usually fall directly under my jurisdiction and the athletic director. Mm-hmm. And finance and athletic director, you have to deal with that. Those are my responsibilities. And, and we go down that line, and that's the news of the form of our organization chart we have. And it seems to, this is new this year because we've not had that. Yeah, I've been, and I also have certain teachers that I'm in charge. I'm a math major, therefore I'm in charge of the math teachers and all new teachers coming in. And several other parts like that. So we try to split those up equally so we have the same number of observations and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the selection of your teachers?
Selection. We have a faculty, well, you know we have a personnel policy department here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg School System. The personnel department, once you identify a vacancy and turn it into the personnel department, their responsibility is to pull the most, the quote, best fit candidates based upon the description of what you say for your job that they have available in the system, in their files. Once these people have been identified, these names are given and screened initially by the personnel department. These names are given to the principal, to his designee. And what we do here on our staff, once we identify those persons, we have interviews set up with them, and we have members of something called our faculty advisory committee. Those are people who are elected by the faculty as their liaisons between the principal and the teachers. Okay, we select certain people from that committee, and the department chairperson from the department where the vacancy lies is the English chairperson. A person from the faculty committee, maybe more than one, depending upon how many people are available. In the summertime, you try to get what you can get, but you try to get a faculty advisory person, a department chairperson, get one of my assistant principals on the team, and then myself. And then we usually go through and observe the people and interview them, and then make recommendations. And my vote is just, they make a recommendation to me as how they want, what we want to do. My vote on the committee is one like theirs, but usually we try to come to some kind of consensus. Mm-hmm. And that gives us some ownership and for us who's going to be with the faculty. It makes them feel better if they have some input in selecting the people. Okay. So teachers have input in that, especially the faculty advisory committee.
Mm-hmm. Curriculum and instruction.
Okay, and naturally, if you're going through your course, you know the principal will be the instructional leader of the school and all this kind of good stuff. Okay, well, I'll tell you, you don't have too much time for that type of stuff. As you being in the Central Hospital, I'm sure you're going to visit schools too. You're trying to maintain, trying to keep the paperwork from overtaking you. My main instructional person is, originally we had two assistant principals and an API. Okay, assistant principal for instruction. That person still has that big responsibility, working directly with the principal. She's basically responsible for making sure that we keep our curriculum clean, okay, that we, well, she works with the department chairperson, she meets with the department chairpersons to discuss concerns they have. She meets with, we as individual principals and individual administrators meet with our own departments. For example, mm-hmm. I meet with the math department, mm-hmm. and when they have concerns, Mr. Smith would meet with his vocational people when they have concerns, and whoever department you're assigned to. Mm-hmm. In the Charlotte Mecklenburg, a lot of our curriculum stuff is passed down to us, because mm-hmm. we have a person in the system who is, quote, the curriculum specialist for math. And they simply feed us the data, and we get memos telling us what to do and what we can't do. You don't have too much flexibility in being able to do a whole lot, because somebody's already made the decision in the hierarchy, and you simply have to implement the decisions. So there isn't that much decision making as far as the curriculum is concerned, except in your individual school, as far as how you can make things fit into your particular school.
Discipline.
Okay, discipline. Discipline is a nightmare. We have a, this year, one of, in our, we are in the comprehensive school planning mm-hmm. stage. I'm going to show you something. I'm going to give you something you can have. We, one of our key things we were working on this year was discipline. I'm supposed to be a disciplinarian. They tell me, I don't know. they tell me that I'm supposed to be.
Supposed to be,
pretty
huh?
rough, okay?
Uh-huh.
At least when I first thought out, I was mellow. Mm-hmm. So last year, we had this discipline plan where we had you simply had an offense and then what the penalties were, boom, boom, boom. And we had a card we kept on students. Once you come to the office, if you don't come to the office, you don't have a card. Once you come to the office, now that you have a copy of this.
Then you have a card.
Then we make a card on you. Okay, and this card is kept in a central location. Okay, and indicate the student ID number, because everything's on the computer then. Name and all that type of stuff. And then you put down the offense the student did, the date, mm-hmm. and then the person who dealt with him, or the teacher who referred him, and then what he did, and then you put the penalty. For example, mm-hmm. if you look at this, don't look at the yellow one, look at this one now. Okay?
Right.
If you look at this, it says what the offense, and you don't have every offense, but you have the general offenses down. This is the general, this is, you got the Mickey Mouse stuff that you deal with. Kid got sent to the office for something that's trivial, then you go through this thing right here with him. First time you do this to him, second time you do that. We try to have parental contact as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. If it's something worthwhile, if it's something that is trivial, then what we can use to deal with the kid. But it's something that a parent needs to know about, because it may have some more severe consequences in the future. We make sure we let the parents know about the first time. But for example, if you got profanity, first time, okay.
2 hours detention.
Yeah, 2 hours detention.
We have after school and parental contact.
Right, and we have that. We have a Mondays and Fridays. We have a teacher who stays. She's on flex schedule, mm-hmm. and she stays 1 hour at the school for detention.
Just 2 days a week.
2 days a week, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't do it every
day.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. Because we had to make it a little. You got to let the kids know about it in advance, mm-hmm. so they can take care of it. Second time you do this, then if you have profanity directed toward a teacher, automatically it's no in school or it's out of school suspension, something that nature. We go through that as our plan we had last year.
Mm-hmm.
So we revised it this year. And it goes through the whole 10 yards.
Well, I mean, it is. It's front and back.
Yeah,
it goes
right.
And, from 1 to 12,
what it does,
spelling out everything.
What it does, it keeps consistency. You don't want to have one, well, your kid does something, mm-hmm. and then my kid does something, and I give your kid one punishment, and they give another kid some other mm-hmm. punishment. That creates a lot of problems. So we needed some kind of consistency. So all my administrators had this in their file. So mm-hmm. when the kid did something, they look at the card, see where they were. This is your second or third offense, or whatever the case may be, and then they tell you what the penalty is mm-hmm. going to be. It makes it. It does not completely take out the some of the random stuff that happens, but it cuts down on the random stuff. It makes the decisions more meaningful, and you can discuss it with somebody mm-hmm. intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided not to use this year. okay. Except for major things,
mm-hmm.
we decided to go to a uniform discipline policy. You see this posted in all my teachers' classrooms. This year, called our comprehensive school planning. The problem we were having was that if a kid does something here, like profanity one time, and we give him something, and then first penalty, and he does something down here for parking in the school and parking lot, and the first mm-hmm. time he sees parent on the conference.
Mm-hmm.
So you keep going through the same thing over and over again. If a kid commits different offenses.
Uh-huh, I see.
Okay, so we want to find some way of dealing with a kid instead of having to admit committing so many different offenses and then having to go so long, he commit offenses, mm-hmm. then we deal with him. Mm-hmm. So we went back and revised the planning, said, okay, the first time you refer to the office, if it's not one of the major offenses, you get the warning for the administrator. The second time you refer to the office, regardless of what it is, okay, if it's something that we found you to be guilty of, you get the 1 hour detention, then we go down through the line.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, we're getting, the administrators are getting, we're having difficulty getting used to getting adjusted to it. It's been a very hard.
It looks like it should be a.
But it's not. Easy. Let me tell you why it's not easy. Suppose you're going through this process and all of a sudden a kid comes up and he's been fighting. Okay. Or suppose a kid comes up with something that's really trivial. Okay. I mean, something really trivial. He gets sent off because John Doe didn't have his, I told John, any student who didn't bring his homework in today that I was going to send to the office. I mean, that's sometimes that does happen, okay? Then you got the kid been office two times already. Now you down here, what, third step, you got to put the kid in 3A's ISS.
ISS for something.
Yeah, see that didn't give you the flexibility you need.
So we still get back to teacher judgment.
Yeah, and use some discretion there, okay? Mm-hmm. Then if you don't do it, then the teachers want to get on your case about what, well, this is the third time, and why do you do so and so and so? So you have to deal with that. So that's where we're dealing with now. And we're trying to tell teachers to be more, think a little bit before you send kids to the office. Don't send them on trivial stuff that you should handle in your own classroom. So that's why that's giving us a problem now. So we're having to go back and still use some discretion in making decisions. You're not going to send a kid home because didn't have a pencil and he's his third time in the office. You're going to put him in ISS. That doesn't make sense.
Transportation
is under my assistant principal, Diane Perry. That's one of her duties. She comes in the morning. She checks the buses in. We are at Harding on TIMS. Okay, mm-hmm. All schools not on TIMS, okay? Mm-hmm. They're finally breaking them in,
yeah,
okay? We're on TIMS, and therefore our assignments are made through the computer. In the mornings, the buses arrive about 6:55, start coming in, because we have a breakfast program here, okay? 6:55, assistant principal's in the parking lot to check the buses in. We have a little check-off list to make sure all the buses get in on time. We have adult bus drivers, by the way. Mm-hmm. All bus drivers, mm-hmm. adult bus drivers. They come in, bring the kids in to let them disembark, and then they go to the cafeteria to eat because we have a large percent of our students on free lunch, mm-hmm. Reduced lunch, or decide to eat breakfast at school as opposed to at home because they get up so early in the mornings. Mm-hmm. They go there and they eat breakfast in the morning, and they hang in the cafeteria and because we don't have a mall.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have a mall.
So they stay in the cafeteria.
Yeah, hang in the cafeteria or in the front of the cafeteria or in a building, the double deck building, there's a big square place there, but it's not a mall. It's just, mm-hmm. just have to be a space
but
there.
They must have some place to congregate. Yeah.
So they go there and they stand there, and then they leave. We have about 40 to 50% of our students ride buses. That's a big ridership. We don't have as many kids with cars as some of the other schools, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But we have a big parking lot. But anyway, a lot of kids walk to, we have some, a lot of walk-ons in the immediate neighborhood. We have a lot of kids who drive, but the biggest percentage of our students ride the bus.
What's the number of buses?
You say 50.
I would say that it would be closer. Yeah, 50%.
Okay.
All right. Utilization of funds.
Okay. Utilization of funds. Child Mecklenburg is unique again. Okay. Mm-hmm. In that, well, I'm not. We have X amount of money that's allocated to the school based upon your enrollment, your 10-day enrollment. That's why you try to get as many kids as you possibly can in school mm-hmm. in the first 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you get so much money per student. And there's broken down to several funds. You got an instructional fund, a general instructional fund, that's for postage and all that type of stuff and rentals, a vocational fund, and different type of funds for that you can use for certain things. And that fund and library fund, media center fund, based upon how many students you have. And you have to disperse that money. It's paper, it's money. It's not really money you have in your possession. Mm-hmm. It's money downtown. You just simply, mm-hmm. It's kept an escrow for you downtown. You simply write a check on it, write a draft, an account on it, make sure it follows the guidelines you have to satisfy. We allocate money to apartments. After I take my expenses out, it's going to take me to run that copy machine and mm-hmm. and my field trips and miscellaneous stuff. I subtract that money from my instructional allotment. Then the money that's remaining, I simply divide the money in the department according to the number of teachers that are in the department or according to the number of students they have in the department, involved in the department. Mm-hmm. And then that money is given, the amount of that money is given to the department chairperson and to my financial secretary. And any request, then they decide how they're going to spend it in the department. And any request that they have to be signed by the department chairperson. Mm-hmm. And then I initial it and send it to my financial secretary, and she subtracts that from the allotment. Uh-huh. As long as they got money in the allotment, they can do it. Mm-hmm. They can spend. That's where they go.
Cafeteria management.
Now, cafeteria management is, in the schools, is pulled away from the principal. Mm-hmm. That's a disjoint thing altogether. She and I communicate and make sure that we run things smoothly, and what she wants to make sure the school runs smoothly. We communicate as far as times, as far as cleaning the cafeteria, but the principal has nothing. In fact, most people don't even have keys to the cafeteria, mm-hmm. to the back part of the cafeteria. That's a complete disjoint thing from the school as far as the management of that's concerned. That's completely held by the cafeteria, run by the cafeteria manager. Mm-hmm. We simply talk and evaluate her, but mm-hmm. we don't have anything to do with her management.
Building and grounds.
The building and grounds. In Charlotte-Mecklenburg, we have a maintenance department that's basically responsible for buildings and grounds. We have our own custodial staff that does that's responsible for doing the minor cleaning of the buildings and minor picking up paper and stuff on the campus, but for the grass cutting and all of the hot, heavy things to do, we have a maintenance department that's responsible for doing that. In this system, though, we have something called a operations specialist, okay, in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, and there are five of them, and they're responsible for two high schools and all the schools that feed those two high schools, mm-hmm. and they're responsible for making sure that you keep your custodial staffs employed. They're responsible for doing that and buying supplies for those. Helping with you buying supplies for those particular schools that they're responsible for. So there are, let's say, 11 high schools, and there are five of those people, and each one of them has two plus one, mm-hmm. one of them has three schools that they're responsible for.
Mm-hmm. Community relations.
Okay. We have a SWASH special program here at Harding High School, mm-hmm. which you may have not heard about. I'll give you a copy of the form over there. We are very fortunate that we have a unique program this year that's just been started. It's called mm-hmm. SWASH. Mm-hmm. It's a school within a school at Harding. Okay. And it's basically what we have on the second floor. It is something we're trying to, ninth graders have been a tendency to get lost in high school. So we've isolated ninth graders and put them upstairs on the first floor, on the top floor. So I went to visit up there in Salisbury and all these other type of schools and look at their middle school concept. Mm-hmm. So our ninth graders up on the second floor, we identified them and got them grouped into three different groups, about 100 some kids per group, mm-hmm. and gave them four teachers. Mm-hmm. And those four teachers work with them, teach them language arts, good. Math, science, and social studies. And they have a wing. They have a wing that they just want from one room to the other. See if and the teachers want to do some interdisciplinary type stuff, mm-hmm. they can do that. They want to teach them for 2 hours, they can do that. They can do what they want to do with their teams. Mm-hmm. And those students stay there for four periods a day, and then the fifth period rain, they hit that floor. Mm-hmm. Okay, they leave mm-hmm. that place like I don't know what. Mm-hmm. Take their electives in their PE class. Mm-hmm. But it's worked out a great deal. It's helped us keep kids in school.
Good.
They don't have opportunity to get involved with the upperclassmen and a lot of the bad habits that may have been formed by the upperclassmen. They're not exposed to that. And it's working out real well.
Are they using cooperative learning?
They're using cooperative technique. Learning. They're
good.
Using. They're doing a lot of interdisciplinary stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of relating the science and the math. They're working on something with gas laws and the math teacher working on ratios. Mm-hmm. You see, the things of this nature and within their group. And the teachers have one extra playing period, and that's that was the catch. We were given two extra positions this year, and the teachers teach four periods, have a fifth period, have team planning. I mean, students are gone. The teachers meet and they call parents and they meet with the students and all that to meet with parents, and then they have the regular playing period.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Man, I forgot what the question was.
The community relations. How do you think
okay,
this community
we have,
about
Harding? We have a partnership with Red Ada Specialty Company. They gave us $51,000 as one of our partners. Harding has changed a great deal. Okay, Harding traditionally, I told you before, was a predominantly white school. Now it's predominantly white, and it's perceived as being the school where black kids want to come. Okay. We have a perception of that we're trying to find a fight, that we are athletically oriented, okay, that we're not as academically as we should be, that when they compare our test results and you're dealing with socioeconomic and various other factors that are concerned, when you start comparing apples to oranges, you get that. We think that, and we feel, and our results show that we are doing darn good with the products that we are dealing with, and we're making these products best they can be based upon the product we have initially coming into
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm.
We think people feel pretty good about the school. We know the students feel good about the school. Okay. The community is, see, you got to realize now that we don't have neighborhood communities anymore. Okay?
No.
Okay.
Your
so our kids, yeah, our kids go to Harley, maybe living over there near West Mecklenburg,
mm-hmm.
okay, or near West Charlotte, especially if there's a black satellite, because the black west side of town is full of black people. And then that means that that you can't have all the black kids going to those schools in those neighborhoods like West Charlotte, Harding, can't be West Mecklenburg, So they have to take those and pull mm-hmm. sectors out of them and mm-hmm. put them in different places. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's a very, very diverse. We think we have a good positive image. We're one that we need to do, we can do some improvement on, but we're working on that, trying to improve it to make it better. We would like to for people to think of us as being an academic giant, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the way things are.
And then it takes years because you're building a new image.
But you just can't build an image. You have the products to build the image, okay? And you in your research, and I'm sure your reading, you've discovered that a couple of some of the things that affect student outcome and quote student achievement more than anything else. Things that affect student success in school deals basically with the family the student comes from. What are the mother's educational level and the expectation that they have, and that goes back to parent expectation.
Mm-hmm.
Money is important. Money is not one of the key things. It has more to do with the expectations that the parent has for them, and the value that the parents place upon education have a lot to do with this, and that's something that we need to that our neighborhood we need to educate parents more to expect more of their kids and want more of their kids, and then that will have a big effect on anything else. You can take the same school and set it in a neighborhood where you got kids whose parents got doctorate degrees, where parents are lawyers, engineers, and all stuff. Then your scores go up tremendously.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How much administrative power and control do you think you have over your school site and your responsibilities?
We try to deal with site-based management. I try to be a participatory type manager. I've been known to be, in my earlier days when I was younger, be a autocratic, okay, a teller mm-hmm. type management, a manager. Now, a lot of the decisions, I let other people make the decision. I see the decisions are being made. The faculty advisory committee, there are certain things that they make decisions about, and that I'm just a voting member of the committee. I try to act as a facilitator. A lot of times teachers don't want to be empowered to do those things, but I'm trying to give them, and I say trying to give them, that means I'm still acting autocratic, okay? But we're letting them have the authority to go ahead and make decisions themselves. I have the authority to run the school, to make sure that we run the school efficiently and effectively, and that we try to give the students the best possible education we can while they're with us. How I disseminate that quote authority is basically left up to the individual principal. And we've been encouraged, and which I think is rightfully so, of letting teachers have more input into running their immediate and educational environment through their representatives.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How did the desegregation of schools affect your role as a principal?
Now you got to remember that when I became principal, we'd already desegregated
mm-hmm.
schools. Okay, in fact, it was done when I was a teacher. So how did it affect my role as a principal? Repeat the question one more time.
Do you think? Well, I'll rephrase. Mm-hmm. Do you think desegregation of schools has any bearing on where you are right now?
Yeah, obviously it does. Okay. If we hadn't desegregated schools, I wouldn't be at Harding High School, obviously, right? I wouldn't have been at Eastway Junior High School. Okay, I think I understand the question now. How do you think the segregation has affected the principalship?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's better as opposed to mine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. As before, in the old days, we had the two different systems, the city blacks, city whites, county blacks, county white, and all this type of stuff going. The consolidation of the desegregation or consolidation of the school systems and tearing down the vestiges of the old structure and hierarchy has resulted in closing of a lot of black facilities and a lot of black principals, and you're probably aware of that more than I. Some of them were relegated to assistant roles, okay, when they first did it, with the understanding that as schools opened, they would be elevated back to principalships. As far as me directly, I don't see how it affected me, because I was not able to experience what happened back in the old part and what's happening in the new part.
Mm-hmm.
I feel I have parity with my colleagues. I feel comfortable. I make sure that my opinion is expressed, and I make sure that my kids get the best they possibly can. I'm in there banging for my kids like anybody else. Mm-hmm. I don't really see how it's affecting me in any adverse way, desegregation. One thing probably some of the segment of the students is probably affecting, because there are probably things you would do differently, and there was probably more trust among the parents when the schools were of either race.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you integrated the school or desegregated the school, that caused parents to be a little more, sometimes more readily wanted to be apprehensive about what was going on in the schools, or whether their kid was getting the shaft, or whether the kid was not being treated fairly, and that made him question that even more. I don't think that happened as much when you had schools that were all of one race, because everybody was treated the same then. Okay.
Do you enjoy your job, and why?
Yes. Do I enjoy my job? Yes. I really enjoy my job. There's something you can say about being a high school principal. There's not a dull moment. Okay, there's always something new. That's why when you were setting up this interview with me, I don't like to mark off time.
Yeah,
because when you mark off time, you don't tell them what may happen. I may have a parent come in who's mad because something happened last night. I got a note on my desk my wife had written down for me. Some kid got slapped on the bus, and didn't leave a telephone number or anything. No. It is a very, very rewarding job. I like dealing with the students. I like dealing with the teachers. I have a very, very dedicated staff. People who are really, really, most of them are really, really into teaching, want to be around kids. And you have to love kids to want to do this.
Yes.
There's not enough money to make you stay in a position if you don't really like doing it. Mm-hmm. I like teaching. I want to be a teacher since I started school. Mm-hmm. Since I was in school myself, I want to be a teacher. And I wanted to be around them. And I hope that someday that I would have been a high school principal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I fulfill that desire. I really like relating to people. I like trying to help kids. I like seeing them going to college. I like seeing them get jobs. I like seeing them becoming adults and successful adults and young adults in the world, whether it's going to college or whether it's getting a job in a factory. I like the idea of being able to have some impact upon their lives, to be able to help them, to be able to correct them when they're wrong, to put them on the right track, not to punish them, but to discipline them, to teach them discipline, how to survive in a way that is, quote, acceptable for a person to make it in this society today.
What do you consider the major problem of your principalship?
What do I consider to be the major problem of my principalship? Paperwork. There's not enough time to actually get into the classrooms, to get into the buildings, to actually observe instruction taking place, to be able to help teachers with the instruction. There's so many other peripheral things that you got to do. Get this report in, get this in, that. There are so much paperwork associated with the job, and so many other things you have to do that you're not really able to be the, quote, instructional leader of the school, because you're more the paper manager of the school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think It makes my job difficult when I don't have too much input into discretion in making decisions that I think could help a kid. If they're, it's cut and dry, you got rules and policies to operate by. If it's cut and dry, where you think that maybe here making this decision would be a benefit to the kid, but you don't make that decision because it's not the standard operating procedure, okay? That's it. The key thing, the key thing that I think really makes the job difficult is what? It's so much peripheral stuff, such as the paperwork that's involved. Mm-hmm. The paperwork is mm-hmm. astronomical.
Especially with so many children.
The federal program, not just so many children. I mean paperwork as far as reports that are due.
Oh, yeah.
And reports. You got this report is due, that report is due. Exactly. You know, and then instead of being able to manage kids, you're trying to manage the paper. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then the constant changing in what's required, like observations and all this type of stuff that's due. These things will lead to a lot of unnecessary problems.
What do you consider the most rewarding about your principalship?
That's probably more difficult than the other one. A lot of things are rewarding. I get a great deal of satisfaction in seeing a child who's probably been a pain, and finally realize that he's she is becoming an adult and they need to get their act straightened out. Mm-hmm. That satisfies more than anything, where you think you really reached a kid and you've gotten a kid back on the right track. It satisfies me when you see a kid who's gotten this letter saying he's been accepted to go to a certain school, or he's gotten something he's really looking for. Coming in and saying, I've been accepted to so-and-so and so, I'm going to college, you know. It's very pleasing to me the day of graduation, stand up on the stage and being able to give the students a diploma and then say something, whisper something to them, man, boy, I'm glad to get rid of you. You know, you say this to them softly, you know, boy, good gracious, like, boy, I never thought you'd get out of this place. And things, something like that. Seeing these people come through and knowing that these are people that you will run into in life. It's very rewarding to me to go into a supermarket and somebody says, Mr. Bell, you taught me when I was back in junior high school over there, York Road. Mm-hmm. Mr. Bell, this is my principal, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That's a good feeling. Mm-hmm. That kids look at you and respect you for what you're doing, for your position, and it makes you feel good.
Do you think that a black person needs a sponsor to become a high school principal today?
Explain what you mean by that.
I mean, someone of the other culture that says that person is able to do it.
That's a tough question. Here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, the procedure is supposed to eliminate that type of subjective type of stuff. As far as race, and they can try to do it as. Yeah.
But I mean, just from experience and from what we've observed and what we know, does that seem to be the case?
I don't know. I wouldn't go for saying that. I'm saying that the more exposure you've gotten by being in workshops, being around, doing things, helping with other type of activities, just not sitting back on your rump. Mm-hmm. But getting involved in committees, getting exposure, people know who you are, that helps. Mm-hmm. And when people get to know you, are black and white. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I don't think it's anything related to quote race as such. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that if you just all in one community, that wouldn't help you. The more right. diverse you are, mm-hmm. As far as having people to know you, the better your chances are of getting a principalship.
I know your time is getting very short. Now, given the fact that there are less than 40 black high school principals in the state of North Carolina, if you knew of a young black, male or female, that aspired to be a high school principal, what advice would you give that person?
Well, naturally, I'm assuming that the person would have enough, the person would get all his credentials in line. Okay, that's the first thing you
first
need to do.
Thing.
First thing you need to do, get all your credentials in line. And this is what I was saying before, you need to be involved in the school. You need to do things other than what's required of you. You don't sit back and just do that which is just required. You know, if you just expect to do A and B, then do C and D too. do a little more, do A, B, C, and D. You need to get involved in committees. You need to volunteer to do stuff on the school campus. You need to volunteer to do stuff at the district level. You need to make sure you get involved with your professional organizations. Make sure that you're aware of what's going on with those. I would suggest also that the person tries to get some linkage with the, if there's a good college where there are a lot of some articulation between the college and the local district, local LEA is involved, that they get some linkage between the college, and so that they can people can talk about them and let them know what they're doing. Try to get as much high visibility as you possibly can, not just for the sake of just being seen, but also so you can, because you can learn from that. Mm-hmm. You can learn from that. Try to seek out experiences where you can learn. If they want you to come and work in the office for a while, help them out in your planning period. We have people doing that now. On their planning periods, they want to come up and help out in the office a little bit. Hey, that's one of the best experiences in the world. And that shows the interest. And also that shows the person who's the administrator at the time. Here's somebody who really wants to do something and they're not asking for something in return. That's a good way to get an experience. Mm-hmm. But you need to get yourself in line, get some have some high visibility, find out what's going on, make sure you got your credentials in order. Try to find opportunities so you can show the things that you've learned. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. You have to work hard, and you need to have a good, trusting wife, a spouse, or whatever the case may be, someone who won't mind sharing you with a lot of other people, because your life is really not your own life, because mm-hmm. when that telephone rings, you have to respond to it. Mm-hmm. And that's very important.
I appreciate you taking the time. We've come to the end of this interview, guys. Mm-hmm. I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. Every interview that I've had has mm-hmm. been quite interesting. Mm-hmm. I had some ideas when I began that there would be a lot of difference maybe between the 64 and the 89 principles, mm-hmm. but I found that all of you are top-notch. Everybody knows his job very well, mm-hmm. and the answers are so similar mm-hmm. that I've come up with the idea that an administrator is an administrator, mm-hmm. and the years don't mean that much. It's that's in you, and the leadership ability, mm-hmm. and the things that you see in children and enjoy people. I really appreciate you taking this time.
Well, I hope Ms. Wells, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope that you're very successful with your endeavor to get your doctoral dissertation completed. I know you're going to do a good job on it. You're doing these live interviews. Just persevere and just sit down every Saturday, like I did Saturday and Sunday, and start writing.
That's right.
Start writing, and you'll be successful with it. And I've enjoyed the opportunity to have a chance to speak with you. And mm-hmm. I really apologize for the runaround we gave you initially, but I was glad we were able to get it worked out and get everything worked out for
you. Well, thank you so much. Okay. And since you were in cohort one, you know where I'm going.
I know
so
where you're going,
I appreciate
right?
that.
When you get the little thing on the wall back there,
it'll be worth it all, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Turn it on. Now I'm going to get an honest answer on.
Which one?
Okay. We're not going to very readily, we're going to be very evasive about that. When you ask,
about the
sponsor.
But look, you're the only one that's evaded it.
Okay, I'm only
you're the only one that everybody else has. But see, the first part of your interview does not jive with that, because that fella that you met, that you all became tight, and he, and you know, it's a reality, and it's always, and it's hard, and we hate it. But that's the way it is. But the way I look at it is that the Lord will raise up friends for you, because when you have that ability, and the way it is, they've got to have somebody to say.
You knew his wife.
I knew. And every one of the young ones, everyone in 89, they said yes. They said, oh, absolutely. Because everyone has been, they know their ability. They don't think they've been put there because they were black, just as a token. They know they were able to do it and are able to do it, but they just had to have that affirmation from somebody else.
And once you get the position, you have to work twice as hard.
Sure, we all recognize it. We all recognize it. But you know, there's some interesting side things that I'm learning from the interviews, and even about the teaching. The thing in back in the old days, they didn't have discipline problems because they said the teachers handled everything.
Teachers were surrogate parents.
That's right.
You did it. You done it.
Right.